Hello and welcome to Ordinary, a podcast that aims to help Christians live for Christ in everyday life. My name is Josh Bannister, and each week I'm joined by Graham Nichols and Mark Ventham, both pastors of Christ Church Haworthheath, an independent evangelical church located in West Sussex here in the UK. This week on Ordinary, we are talking about church membership. Graham and Mark discuss why having some kind of church membership system works, a little bit about where we see that modelled in Scripture, and what some of the practicalities of church membership are. We also talk about the many benefits to the individuals in the church and to the church as a whole. Enjoy the podcast, and I'll catch you on the other side.
My name is Graham Nichols.
And my name is Mark Ventham.
And I'm Josh Bannister, and you're listening to Ordinary. This week on Ordinary, we're talking about membership. Last week we spoke about church on the podcast, didn't we? So this is quite a nice follow-up. The question I want to start with is, why do we have models of membership in our churches?
We're going to think about some of the sort of practical reasons and why it's a great thing, but at the level of what does the Bible show us and teach us, it seems really clear in the New Testament that there were recognised members of churches. There was a body of people you could put your arms around and say, this is the local church in Rome, this is the local church in Ephesus. And people joined the local church by being baptized and added to their number. So membership, although perhaps the word membership, or certainly the word membership is not used in the New Testament, the idea that you belong or you don't belong is really clear in the New Testament. So we want to, in our own way, try and recognize that by the way we have membership in local churches.
So we, as a church, want to make sure that's happening, and we do that in a number of ways, but primarily we invite anyone who is a believer in the Lord Jesus to think about joining us in formal membership. And so one of the ways we do that is as an eldership, one of the elders or two of the elders would go around and interview someone to talk about exactly what they believe, have a great understanding of their faith, make sure they are on board with us in terms of doctrinally, that they understand the cross, they understand what it is to be a believer. And if they are can understand it, speak of that coherently and simply, then we yearn for people just to then be part of us in that way. We want to make it, in one sense, as welcoming as we can, but we don't want to let anyone into membership either, because we want to guard those doors of saying, no, actually it is for believers who love Christ and are following Christ.
Yeah, it's worth probably recognising that some people don't think membership's a good idea. So you would get some Christians, this is not non-Christian, but Christians who would come along and say, well, I belong to the universal church, I belong to the family of believers all around the world. So what's the thing about this local membership? Isn't that kind of a bit organisational and a bit kind of dull? And, you know, I'd rather embrace the whole church. And certainly when you become a Christian, you belong to the universal church. And if you're still alive, you're part of the visible church. So you're part of the big gathering of God's people all around the world. So that's great. And you want to connect with people all around the world. But the whole way the New Testament is written, there's local churches with local accountability. And if you just term yourself a sort of global member of the church, you're not really accountable to a local family. You're not accountable to serve. You're not really getting all the benefits of that. And so you're kind of then in control of it. I think it's about autonomy if you do that. You're kind of saying, I'll dip in and dip out just as I want, and I'll kind of get the benefit. And if I want to serve, I'll serve. And if I don't want to serve, I won't serve. But it's kind of, you're not committing. You're not letting go of some degree of autonomy that you do as you become a sort of member of the church. And so I think, you know, we would really encourage anyone, wherever they are, to find a local church. Might not be the ideal church for them because of where they are. But as long as it's teaching the Bible and they love Jesus, to commit to that local family, because we think that's both biblical, and as we'll see as we kind of carry on talking, it's beneficial as well.
It's interesting, isn't it? I think one of the things that we're seeing in our culture is very much this consumer idea. and I think we probably talked a little bit about it last week, but the whole idea of that I can just tip up to a church, hear a little bit of preaching, sing a few songs, get a good coffee, and go home again. Yeah. It's kind of, there seems to be a sense of that that is the mentality for some in the life of the church. That, well, you know, I'm going on a Sunday, it's what I do, it's my Sunday routine. But actually, the Bible says, no, it's much more than that. It's not just about you coming, hearing some teaching, having a coffee, catching up with a few friends and leaving again. Actually, as we were thinking about last week, we're a body, we're a family, we're all those metaphors that we use in terms of army as well. There is something much more than just, hey, I can turn up, which is why I think membership then is a tangible way of expressing that. So although that word isn't ever seen in the Bible, as we've been kind of talking, we're seeing actually it is a recognisable pattern. It's interesting, I think I've become stronger on this over the years. I was saying earlier to Graham that, you know, when I was back at college, I had to write a paper, you know, is biblical, is membership biblical? And I think I argued back then, well, I think it's a good thing, but I don't think it's necessary. You can see it clearly biblically. I think I've moved on. I think actually you do see it biblically expressed through what Graham was saying earlier in terms of the local churches, the way they were recognised. I think you see it particularly when Paul comes in 1 Corinthians 5 to deal with someone who is not behaving rightly, and he talks about putting them outside of. Well, in order to put them outside of, you have to be part of something. You have to be recognised as inside something. So I think the Bible does speak very much of that. And I think the whole body picture and the whole army idea, the whole family idea means that actually you are committing. It isn't just about, hey, this is a club where I can turn up, do what I want, you know, book into my next gym class, turn up, do my cycling, as it were, listen, get my exercise and go home, maybe talk to a few people. Church isn't that. It's much more, which is what I think membership, and particularly I think why we are pretty tight on this, is that we want people not just to be on the fringe of church, we want people to come and to feel welcome, but we want people primarily to become members, those who love Christ, to be committed to this particular body of church and to serve and express that sense of fellowship. So it may be worth just talking a little bit about, okay, well, what does that look like practically?
Yeah, just one little question that was coming in my mind as you were speaking.
Oh, nice.
What about people who are involved in sort of parachurch ministries, and how do those two things connect? So you got Josh here, who's involved in a band, Lion of Judah, who are made up of people from more than one church, but also connect with people from lots of different churches. Perhaps more conventionally in church experience, you've got people who are in parachurch ministries, mission organisations, some ministry that kind of operates across the country or across the world. So how does that connect? Because they often would say, well, that's my church. You know, this little network of people in that organisation, that's my church. So what would we be saying to them? We obviously think that's good, don't we?
We do. We love the Lion of Judah. I think it's interesting that, so there would be some church networks that would say, actually, you should have nothing to do with any other parachurch organisation. It's all done through the church. We wouldn't hold to that view. But parachurch isn't church.
Yeah.
So, you know, it is a good thing, and it is a good place of fellowship. It can be a great place of accountability. It can be a great place of encouragement and help, but it's not church. At the end of the day, the church is a body of people who are formed together, who have recognized officers. In our church, we call them elders and deacons. And there is a coming together in the sense of affirming the truths of Scripture, particularly what we call the key doctrines, what we would hold to. And there is a sense of committing to that body. And there is a time where the sacraments, the sharing of the bread and the drinking of the cup together, they're all markers of what a church does, which is different to what a parachurch does. So, hey, yeah, go and be part of a parachurch, serve well, use that for the glory of God, but the church is the church, and we want to be part of a local church as well. And ideally, which is one of the things that we've done with Lion of Judah, is that they've become a mission partner with us. So there is a sense of accountability that they, as a parachurch organisation, are committed to and come under the oversight of a local church leadership as well.
Yeah, and I think we'd want that for any parachurch person, as it were. So whether you're in a band or whether you're some people have a kind of an itinerant ministry, so they preach a lot in other places. They've got some sort of national recognition as an evangelist or as a Bible teacher or something. So they're often away from their local churches, and that can be quite a challenge. But we'd always encourage them to be rooted in a local church, to get fellowship there, to have some accountability partners there, and not just think, well, my church is this kind of movable set of people. I'm seeing different people every week, and kind of my church is different every week, but to somehow connect. But I know historically that's been hard for some people, who, particularly those who kind of preach somewhere else every week, to kind of get rooted. But it tends to, that disconnect tends to create problems. And I know we keep using accountability, it sounds rather stern, but just that lack of connection and sort of an understanding of people who really know you and can really try and help you and pray for you and so on.
Well, it raises an interesting question. What is church per se? I mean, we talked last time about body and family, and all those things are true. But what makes the church distinct from a parachurch organisation, you know, in lots of ways? And I think some of the things I was saying earlier, but you may want to just crystallise them. I mean, it must be that there are recognised officers in terms of elders and deacons. It must be a place where the word is being preached, faithfully proclaimed in that sense. A place where the sacraments are being expressed and demonstrated.
What do you mean by the sacraments?
So I mean communion, bread and wine, baptism.
Yeah.
The church is the means, it seems to me biblically, of the place which has the authority to declare this person is a believer, recognised through baptism. This person is not a believer. That authority is held with the church, not a parachurch. And therefore, members are committing to one another to submit to a leadership that is under Christ, the ultimate chief shepherd. And, you know, there is a sense of wanting to serve together, a sense of wanting to steward our time and finances together, and a sense of ultimately, I think another marker of the church is discipline. But by putting yourself under the leadership, you are saying, if I wander from the faith, you have my permission to discipline me in order to bring me back into fellowship as you can.
Yeah, and I think you mentioned the word fellowship. Fellowship is a key marker of the church as well. So in Acts 2, sort of 42 and following, it's one of the things. What did the early church do? They had everything in common. And fellowship was, along with teaching and breaking of bread and prayer and praise and evangelism, was like a key marker. We tend to use the word fellowship as a sort of a synonym for friendship in churches. We kind of say, you know, it was a good time of fellowship, meaning we had a bit of fun. The Bible tends to use the word fellowship in terms of sharing a common life, which has practical outworkings. It is sharing our lives in sense of talking and friendship, but it's sharing our lives practically and sharing our lives in prayer, sort of physical help, material help, spiritual help, spiritual encouragement, and a sense of collective responsibility. And I think we are not, we're sort of infants in this in our own church circles, partly because of the pressing individualism that's kind of part of our Western culture, and we've taken that on board, I think, as churches, that we stress kind of personal piety and personal quiet times, and we kind of stress the capitalist dream of personal property, and which is in lots of ways a good thing. We own our own property, God blesses us with it, and that's fine. But, you know, mostly we live in our houses, and they're kind of shut up places that we control. And you know, let's face it, we would not be outraged exactly, but we would find it surprising if people were giving away as much stuff as they were in the New Testament. If people were giving away cars and you know, free holidays to people because they were in need, or, you know, doing a bit more than just handing down a few children's clothes. We think that was exceptional, but it shouldn't really be exceptional. Dualistic context where materially we're mostly all okay-ish. You know, what does that look like? And do we need to do a bit more? In our own church, I know there's been times in the past where someone gave me a tumble dryer once. And just as a love gift, just as a thing, they were around our house one day and ours broke down, and they bought one and actually delivered it, and that was like well, I felt like I was back in the Book of Acts for right. a moment, mm-hmm. and someone gave someone else a car, uh-huh. you know, a sort of hand me down car, and you know, that's more at the level of sacrificial. This is not like some closer. You know, my 2-year-old's grown out of this. Is like proper, you know, reasonably materially significant sacrifice that someone was making in giving away a car or a tumble dryer or something. So I think we want to see that. That's a distinctive of local church life that is both encouraged and to some degree regulated within the church. There's some kind of overview of that happening. It's something we kind of need to work on, but it's something distinctive, I think, of the local church.
But it raises it in terms of the membership, isn't it? Because I was just sitting there thinking, okay, we'd certainly want to encourage that level of fellowship and sense of care for one another. And I was thinking, actually, okay, so what's the distinctive for someone who is a believer who turns up on a Sunday with us is what we would loosely call fringe, that, you know, they're kind of turning up, but they're not committed. Yeah. And what do we allow them? Well, we would say that they're more than welcome to attend any meeting, that if they are a believer in good standing, they can join with us at the table and share with us in communion. But what is it that actually brings them into membership? Is that there comes a point whereby that actually it is very hard to say that we want to show them love as a neighbour. We'd do, if there is a crisis, we would seek to help them. But because they are not in membership, there is a sense of that level of fellowship that you're talking about doesn't quite happen, because you're saying you're not really with us, but we are with you. And it's not that this sounds like we're not very charitable. Unless you become a member with us, we're not going to look after you. That's not what I'm saying. But there is certainly a level of care that comes that ups as someone says, hey, I'm a member, I'm committing to you. Because then we have to take even more seriously that responsibility to look out for them as an eldership, but as a church, suddenly, you know, we are literally bearing with one another and seeking to care for one another practically. And that level of fellowship moves up a notch, I think, as someone commits in. Yeah. Whereas if you're always on the fringe, yeah, we're going to seek to love you, but actually you're saying you're not with us. So we don't have that level of responsibility or concern or care for you as much as if you were a member with us. That there is something changes.
Yeah, because the idea that you have unlimited resources and time is just not true. Mm. So given that you're always going to have limited resources and time, you've got to make value judgments all the time. So your closer fellowship and commitment to fellowship has to be with the local church. It has to be with Christians in general, and then sort of spilling out to the world. So we don't have quite the same obligations to the world in general, the unbelieving world. We have obligations to preach the gospel to them, but not to do good and care for them in quite the same way as the ones that God has put right in front of us as our family. Mm. You know, in the same way that our literal families, our husbands, wives and children and stuff, we're clearly more responsible for their material needs and spiritual welfare than we are for someone who's not in our immediate family, because God's made them right in front of us. And so that's just the same model in the church. If they're in our church family, we're more responsible than if they're not in our church family.
I think it's just the building out what love your neighbour is, isn't it? Yeah. Your neighbour is the people who are immediately next to you. And the closer they are to you, the greater your level of responsibility for them. But we don't want people just to join the church so they can access, you know, even greater resources. That's not what we're saying.
So what are some of the benefits of joining the church?
Well, before we get to the benefits, though, I wonder if there's any element of protection for the church involved in membership. You know, we've talked quite a lot about why it's beneficial to be a member and for the members why it's good. Is there an element of protection over the church family with membership models? Do you see where I'm driving at with that?
I think that, I mean, one answer, maybe it's not what you're thinking of, but I mean, one answer would be that we as leaders particularly have a responsibility to protect the church from both false doctrine but also wrong behaviour. So if you're a member of the church, you're kind of getting the benefit of consecutive teaching that's trying to both teach true doctrine but also expose wrong doctrine, wrong teaching. So that's a benefit. And being in one local church means you get consistency of that. You're not just kind of dipping around and listening to podcasts and stuff, as hopefully people are doing listening to this. But you're not just doing that in a random way. You've got some more consistent teaching. Yeah. But I think also, I mean, Mark mentioned about discipline. When people think about church discipline, they might think just this kind of severity of putting someone out of the church. But discipline happens at a really informal level. It happens at a slightly more formal level. So somebody may be behaving in a way that we think is wrong. We as leaders, you know, either in conjunction with other people or not, but, you know, as leaders may go and speak to that person. And, you know, it might be difficult for them because we say, you know, this behaviour that you're doing is not right before God, and here's this kind of explanation why, and encourage them to stop doing whatever they're doing. That is a protection in the end for them.
Yeah.
That's trying to help them. That's not trying to sort of beat everyone up because they're not doing quite what we want them to do, but it's hopefully, you know, and we've seen it in cases where it's a protection because they see that and they repent. So there's
protection of the individuals who have closer relationships with a church leadership who can watch over them and protect them from themselves in a sense, but also the protection of the church family, as there is some governance over who is teaching in the church what they're teaching.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I mean, we've been amazingly blessed in our church that you know, we have no complacency about it, but there's been a long sustained period where, you know, the teaching quality, because it's me and Mark, is maybe average, but the consistency of teaching the Bible, where you kind of look back over 20, 30 years and it's been there for all that time, where we've taught the Bible and haven't strayed from that, you know, a lot. It might be the odd Sunday where we say something a bit quirky, but, you know, generally speaking, that's an amazing blessing. I think part of that has been not just the individual sort of full-time ministers who are there, but the church as a whole and the leadership, particularly having that culture and constantly looking and kind of checking each other and so forth. So yeah, there's a protection for that as well, sort of through that.
I was just thinking, you know, in terms of the protection, particularly regarding church discipline, is that often we think church discipline is just a case of, hey, someone sins and you put them out of membership. But actually, as Graham was alluding, it's not just the leaders who are saying, actually, if we see someone doing something wrong, we call them on it. But actually, church discipline works at all the levels all the time. So in one sense, the first level of church warning is just the kind of one another admonishing one, you know, warning each other. Hey, you seem to be, I'm observing that you are behaving in this way, and it's not just once, but hey, you seem to be really grumpy every Sunday morning. What's going on? You know, there's a warning there that that's the first level of church discipline. You might then rebuke someone the next level up. You know, you're not just warning them, by the way, you're grumpy. Hey, being grumpy is a sin. Stop it. And then you're kind of, you know, and then it works itself up, particularly if it's a serious sin, whereby you're into the Matthew 18 picture of someone, one comes along, then two warn, and then the elders come, and then you're into talking maybe suspension of privilege. You're not going to be able to join us in the table whilst you persist in this sinful behaviour. If they still don't heed the warning, then you're saying, actually, we're going to put you outside of membership, with the hope always of restoration and bringing them back in. So I think you're always working at different levels. I think we often get so, and that's part of being a church family. You're saying, actually, I want that. I want that level of love, and that primarily it is love that drives this, that says, I'm so concerned about you that I'm going to speak truth to you in love that will keep you from sinning and, in the end, drifting from Christ. So, you know, that's what the real big benefit of church membership is you're saying, actually, I'm taking my faith so seriously, I want others to be able to speak into my life because the Bible says I need that. Mm. It's striking. The Bible never speaks of the Christian as an individual in the sense of, hey, you can go it alone. You don't ever need anyone else. It's absolutely full of, especially the New Testament, you think of all the one anothering commands. It's just over and over and over. Love one another, bear one another, speak truth to one another. You know, these means of, we need one another. And yet so often in our culture, we think we don't, and we can go it alone, but you can't. It's a love thing. And that's why it's membership is so important.
Yeah. I think it's a pyramid, the discipline thing, where the broadest base of the pyramid should be lots and lots of low-level discipline going on, in the sense of just admonishing one another and helping one another. And that's where we really need some work. And then it's a pyramid in the sense that at the top you've got slightly more formal, you know, two people visiting and so forth. And then at the sort of very top, not that we're better than everyone else, but you also mean the top in the sort of concept is the elders going to someone and the formal discipline and maybe putting someone out of the church. So that's the natural, that should be the pyramid, that it's quite exceptional for the elders. I think, unfortunately, the whole thing's upside down often, where what's mostly going on is the elders having to deal with situations, and what's not going on very much is the thin bit at the top is actually people admonishing one another. Because I think it's in busy lives, it's really hard to build deep enough relationships where you can admonish, where you can actually speak into someone's lives because you actually understand their lives. You know, mostly we're sampling at such a high level, we don't know what's going on in people's lives. So we can't speak into it, even if we loved them and cared for them, because we don't quite know what they're doing. We don't really know whether they've, you know, have a problem with anger, or whether they're not ever reading the Bible together as a family, or, you know, that they're just tending towards the idolatry of this or that thing, or self-pity, or we just don't see that, because we see them on a Sunday and we have a chat, and, you know, we know a couple of things, we know what, how their work's going, but we don't really know what they're doing.
Especially as the church exponentially grows.
Yeah. So in a larger church, you've got to have clusters of that. You can't have common fellowship with everyone, but you do need clusters of people who are fellowshipping at that kind of deep level, and for the membership to work. And we need people who think, these are my family, and so I can't do everyone, but I can do this little group that I'm friendly with, and let's build out from that. So a lot of membership is, it's formal in that it's under the leadership of the church, but a lot of it is informal, and we're just creating the culture where that happens, and a sort of sense of obligation for that to happen.
Sounds like people need to be a lot more hospitable. Sounds like it could be a upcoming podcast or something.
I think it's all part of it, and we should definitely do a podcast about that. Is it anything else you want to say about membership?
Well, I think it's just worth saying, you know, in our church setting, what we ask people to commit to in becoming a member is, in effect, we say to them, look, you know, commit to obviously what we believe as a church, and we hold to the historical creeds, and we'd be very clear on some of the areas where there would be differences in churches, and thinking about the role of women or the charismatic gifts, and we kind of lay out very clearly where we believe the Bible teaches on these matters, so that people know exactly where we stand, and in this day and age on the sexuality questions as well. So we're trying to say, yep, this is what we believe the Bible teaches, this is where we stand, and, you know, if you're going to join with us, we want you to commit to that. Or if you
is there a requirement for them to agree with all that, or is there a requirement for them to accept that that's the standing of the church?
More that. So we would expect them not just to accept, but to submit to it. Mm-hmm. So in other words, this is what we hold to. We recognise some believers will disagree on these particular areas, and we therefore don't say you must absolutely believe 100% exactly how we do on these issues, but if you are going to be a member of this church, this is what we teach, and we would expect you to submit to that and recognise that this is the teaching of the church. In other words, we don't want you coming in and thinking, hey, this church has got it wrong, we're going to start actively teaching against, or always, this is what we teach, this is what we will teach from the front when we come to such passages. So part of joining us is submit to that. And then we expect people to, we say to people, look, we expect you to serve in the life of the church as you can. And to serve means the giving of your time. And it also at times can mean the giving of your money. So, there are other factors of being a member of the local church. And we expect you to join with us in the meetings of the church. So primarily the Sunday meetings, but also the midweek meetings of small group, community groups, as well as church meeting, prayer meetings. So I don't think we set the bar massively high, but we are setting the bar somewhere that says this is what it means to be a member. And we lay that out to people, and we do a 3-week course where we kind of spell out what all these things are, what we believe, what it means to belong, what the distinctives of Christ Church are, what their part is, because we take this seriously.
Make sure people know what they're getting.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and I think you have to do that in a larger church as well, because in a smaller church it's kind of obvious, but when you've got a larger church where lots of meetings are going on, you've got to give people some idea. So without making a rule, an absolute rule, we tend to say to people, you need to make it to at least one Sunday gathering, or you're not really functioning as a sort of member of the church. You know, obviously holidays and illness accepting and so on. It's great if you could serve in at least one ministry in the church, and to get together in one small group through the week, whether it's the community group or it's with some other sort of gathering. And again, we're not saying in order that's the condition of membership. We're just saying if you want to know what it looks like, there's often things going on all through the week, so you can't sort of serve in toddler group and go to all the older people's daytime house groups and to every other community group and, you know, to other special meetings, evangelistic meetings and Christianity Explored and youth meetings. So, you know, you got to figure out something in all of that. You can't do all of that. So here's a sort of a benchmark that will help you sort of calibrate. It's probably in the category of tithing, in the sense that it's something that you're we're not compelled to do in the New Testament, but it's kind of a benchmark to say, well, here's a starting place to kind of think and to work out from.
As we always say, why would you not want to?
Yeah.
You know, why would you not want to be gathering with God's people as you have opportunity to do so? And you know, we recognise as well that we want people to be in the world as well, you know, proclaiming Christ, working hard, doing well in all those areas for the glory of Christ. But there are opportunities in each week to gather with God's people, and we need to, for our own good and for the glory of Jesus. I think that's enough on the membership itself, but it's kind of raised a number of issues, I think, throughout this podcast, particularly, well, what is it to serve? So I think we've got one coming up on that. Hospitality, how do we get to know each other better? What does that look like? And what does that mean? So listen up over these coming weeks.
Got questions or comments? Then email us on ordinary@cchh.org.uk. We'd love to hear from you. So do get in touch with us. Do share the podcast with your friends if you feel it would be helpful for them. And come back again next week when we're going to be talking about serving in the church.